Hi, I'm Lorna Slater, one of the co-leaders of the Scottish Green Party.
And I'm Patrick Harvey, I'm the other one.
It's nice to see you, Patrick. So what have you been up to? You've been away.
Yeah, well, Parliament has returned from the summer recess, and we've started getting our teeth stuck into the issues that are ahead of us, but also the European Green Party has been looking back at a successful European campaign. So I headed over to Brussels for... The European Green Party has these leaders meetings every once in a while, and I guess in future we'll be able to alternate attending those. This was looking really at some of the really fantastic results that were happening across Europe in the European election. It's the biggest Green group the European Parliament's ever seen by quite some way. Our friends in the Green Party of England and Wales did very well, going from 3 seats to 7. As you know, we had our best result ever in Scotland, but not quite enough to get our first MEP seat. But we really know that we need to maintain our position as part of that European family of Green parties. Brexit may be, if it's completed, and we still think it's possible to stop it, it may take the UK out of the European Union. It may force Scotland against our will out of the European Union, but it's not going to take the Scottish Green Party out of our European family. We're staying in that, and we want to make sure that those links stay strong.
So I've had a busy week as well. I've been helping with our by-election campaign. We've got two by-elections happening now, one in Thornywood, our candidate there is Rosemary McGowan, and one in Bridge of Don, where our candidate is Sylvia Hardy.
You've been out and about in the doorsteps with them, have you?
I didn't get up to Aberdeen, but I did get to Thornywood.
Fantastic.
Absolutely, so a bit of door knocking there. That was really good. And I was speaking at a Yes event in Clackamannanshire. So it feels like the kind of Yes movement is perking up its ears and getting going. It was a fantastic event. They had some really good bands, lots of good energy. It was really good fun.
Well, and there's lots of excitement about that, again, as people are just commemorating, stroke celebrating the 5th anniversary of the independence referendum. And, I was thinking this morning, somewhere out there in a parallel universe, there is the Scotland where we voted yes. And not only would we be now forging ahead with that kind of radical vision of what a green independent Scotland looks like, but I think there's no chance at all that the UK would have then embarked on a Brexit vote as well. So actually, if Scotland had voted yes, it could have been the best thing that happened to Scotland. It could have been the best thing that happened for the UK as well.
I was thinking today how it was so nice during that independence referendum to vote for a positive vision of the future. At the moment, it always seems like we're always voting to avoid some terrible catastrophe instead of voting for something that we want. Always seem to be voting for to try and stop something that we really don't want. And I really hate this sort of negative vision that seems to be happening. It's like, oh, vote this way to avoid chlorinated chicken, instead of saying, here's how we can be a great country. We can be, a proud independent country, part of the EU. Here's a vision for how Scotland can be that.
And that's what I think a lot of people want to hear. We know that there will be another chance to put the question on independence to the people of Scotland again, but it has to be one that really engages with the positive opportunities. We want to avoid what the UK is doing, which is an attempt to kind of double down on that kind of post-Thatcherite, neoliberal, race-to-the-bottom kind of economic model. That may be the direction that Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings would like to force the country, but it's not what I think most people want. Even those who have felt failed and left behind by a political system that hasn't been listening to them, they have positive ideas about the way their country could shape up. That's one of the reasons why the increasing use of citizens' assemblies could be a really powerful tool to help to widen that political debate in Scotland in a way that happened during the independence referendum. Let's allow the public, the people of Scotland, to set the terms, to define the questions, rather than that being down to political parties.
I think that sounds like a really good idea. My experience of the independence referendum was incredibly positive, and I know other people have said it was divisive, and certainly unionists talk about how divisive it was, but that was absolutely not my experience. My husband was a no voter, and I completely understood his reasons for voting no, and he was voting with his conscience as a person from the north of England who felt he couldn't abandon his family to endless Tory austerity. I completely understand that. He has just today allowed me to tweet his photo as a yes, and now a yes voter, which was a nice change. But I didn't find it was divisive even on our household. What I remember was going to the gym, going on the street, and everybody was talking about proportional representation. Everybody was talking about democracy and how it works and how Scotland's voice, it wasn't being heard in Westminster. You know, the girls working in the cafeteria were discussing this with clients, and I loved how everybody got involved. Everybody had a good think about democracy and how, what our place in it is. And I have never come across that energy anywhere else.
And it's the polar opposite of what happened in 2016 with the European referendum, where, you know, the not just the Leave campaign, but I think the short nature of the of that referendum campaign was almost designed to stop people getting into the detail and stop people really engaging with the big issues rather than just this mindless, simplistic slogan, take back control. You know, if that's all the Yes campaign had had in 2014, I wouldn't have been happy to take part in a campaign on those narrow, dishonest terms, just saying take back control and not answering any of the big questions. So yeah, if a democratic contest is going to be empowering in that way, it has to give people the chance to get their teeth stuck into the big questions. That happened in 2014, and the failure to do that in 2016 is one of the reasons that's resulted in the utter chaos and catastrophe that's followed in the 3 years since, and the contempt that's been shown to Scotland and to devolution.
Something that I was thinking of when I was at this excellent Yes event in Clackmannanshire, this was very much a grassroots event. People brought their own home baking, they brought their kids, they did their own face paint, local bands volunteered their time. It was absolutely a grassroots a movement, a grassroots event, and how different that is from the sort of Aaron Banks millionaire-funded Brexit, which is the opposite of that. It's absolute millionaires and billionaires trying to persuade people by throwing a lot of money instead of local people organizing an event about something that they really care about. It just struck me that they were sort of mirror images of one another.
Yes. I mean, you can't really imagine Aaron Banks coming up with a tray of his home baking in that way, you know. Democracy with cake has always got to be better, surely.
The other fun thing that you may have noticed us doing last week, I say us as though with my Women's Network hat on, is we launched our Women Network Superheroes campaign.
Oh yes, there's been loads of that on Twitter. Yeah, how did that come about?
So what we were finding is that many of our women who were interested in standing for Holyrood were feeling uncomfortable about writing their statements. It's uncomfortable for a lot of people to write about their strengths and to try and say, you should vote for me because I'm good at organizing, because I'm good at this. And people were finding it so uncomfortable that one of our Women's Network members, she got frustrated with herself and just wrote what she felt was an honest statement. She can negotiate with toddlers. She can potty train one child while feeding another. She can, you know, tidy up a lounge in 20 minutes. And she wrote it as a joke. But then someone pointed out, those are actual legitimate skills, negotiating, organizing, planning. And actually, it wasn't that she didn't have the skills. It was actually that she had superpowers. Mm. And so it became this sort of joke that actually all these women who were thinking that I'm not good enough, I don't have the right skills, are actually have superpowers. And so we wanted to kind of capture that and have a bit of fun as well. Because a lot of what we talk about in politics is so serious. And to have women look at themselves and go, do you know what? I do have superpowers, whether that's negotiating with toddlers or organizing a local event. We're trying to convince women that they already have the skills they need to be fantastic MPs.
Negotiating with toddlers sounds to me like ideal prep for being a committee convener in the Scottish Parliament. Absolutely. No question about it. So there's been loads of those kind of superhero identities created for candidates around Scotland.
Absolutely. It's been a lot of fun. As someone who's, you know, looking from the outside as a not a parliamentarian myself, I know there's a lot of speculation about when we'll have a general election. Is that something you know anything about?
I think everybody can feel that it's coming. Whether it ends up happening in a way that allows us to reconsider Brexit and hopefully stop Brexit, whether the Johnson government is successful in their destructive and unnecessary project of taking us out of Europe, Even if they are successful in those terms, they will then want to go into the next few years with a parliamentary majority. And it's possible that by doing a deal with the far-right Brexit party, they may think they can achieve that. I think we've got a huge job on our hands to stop that happening. But yeah, I think, you know, obviously people are speculating about maybe it could be November. That's where a lot of the kind of smart money might be getting put down at the moment. But things have been so much in flux in the last few months and years. And particularly, you know, the closer this gets to yet another Brexit deadline, things are even more in flux. So I don't think anyone knows for sure when it's going to happen, but everybody can feel that it's coming soon. So green branches around the country are setting out at the moment to decide which seats they're going to contest. They're selecting candidates. My branch AGM is coming up in Glasgow, and they're going to be selecting candidates for some seats in Glasgow. And I know that branches around the country are doing that as well.
I mean, to me, the prospect of a no-deal Brexit is terrifying. The idea that a government would inflict upon its own citizens food shortages, medicine shortages, knowing that there would be unrest, that there would be delays in getting vital goods and services, I almost can't believe it, you know, and it feels like everybody's too calm, like we should be doing something more. What should we be doing? Have you any idea? Because I really don't know, and it seems very worrying that, you know, people are saying they won't be able to get insulin and things.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Scottish Government is producing some information to try and help guide people through those uncertainties. But I think we need to be, you know, realistic about this. The uncertainty is part of the UK government's purpose. You know, this is not just about whether the UK should be in or outside of Europe. It's very clear now that their agenda is to double down on that deregulated, hard right economic model, which has already failed us. They're only going to be able to do that. They're only going to be able to acquire consent for that by creating a disaster, by creating a crisis, and then capitalising on it. And this is one of the most frustrating things. The right in politics are disturbingly good at creating a crisis and then capitalising on it. You know, I think progressive forces around the world need to be in a stronger position to say, look, you have been failed. You should feel angry about the status quo. But the kind of people who've been creating that status quo are the Boris Johnsons, the Jacob Rees-Moggs, the Ian Duncan Smiths, the Michael Goves. They are the ones who've brought us to the point of the crisis that has created genuine anger. But let's not allow them to channel that anger in the way that's going to serve their own purposes. Mm. You know, these are the people that we should be taking back control from. These entitled, you know, hard right politicians who...
Rich white men.
Yeah, well, they're interested in pursuing even more of an economic model that's created division, that's created inequality, and that has absolutely created a path to unsustainability. So... yeah, this is no longer just about EU membership. This is about something much deeper, and the real threat that they pose will only be realised after they take the UK out of Europe, if they manage to achieve that. So we need to stiffen our resolve to try and prevent that from happening, but we also need to be making the case for a genuinely transformational approach to how we run our affairs, how we run our society and our economy. A Green New Deal is the Scottish Green Party's approach to setting out that transformational agenda, showing how you can rebuild the public sector so that it's able to deliver the things that previous generations took for granted.
Use the power of the state. Food, the basics that our current economy is not delivering for so many people.
Absolutely. And also to use the power of the public sector to invest in building the economy that will be needed after the age of fossil fuels, after the age of our current unsustainable economy has passed. Because, you know, let's look at just a recent example in Scotland. Longannan, the last coal-fired power station in Scotland, has closed. Everybody knew for a decade before it closed that it was coming to the end of its life. But the local council, the Scottish government, and the operators were all saying, we're fully committed to the ongoing future of this plant. And that's dishonest. That last decade should have been used to invest in the local community, to invest in what the community would need to provide jobs and prosperity after the plant closed. Give people some reality about, you know, this is coming to the end of its life. Here's what we're going to do next. Here's where our future prosperity comes from. And at the moment, Scotland is in danger of repeating that kind of mistake on a massive scale. The oil and gas industry is coming to the end of its life. It is not our future, and we need to be investing now in building the sustainable green economy that will provide jobs and prosperity and equality into the future. That's what a Green New Deal is about. It's not leaving it to the market, but using the power of the state to do that.
And well, in my day job, as you know, I'm an engineer with Orbital Marine Power, and we are starting to see already oil and gas firms transition toward these more sustainable economies. And one of the ones that I've been giving as an example is my company working with Texo in Dundee, in the port of Dundee, to build our turbine. Now, this is big steel shipbuilding style manufacturers. This is heavy industry. Absolutely. So this is bringing heavy industry back to Scotland. And in fact, Texo have had to go on a massive recruitment campaign because the skills, the talented people from Dundee who used to build ships and used to do all that heavy industry have sort of dispersed. And so they've had to try and lure people back. And we will have the jobs. The renewable industry will have all these highly technical jobs. There's no reason we can't plan to transition them and keep these skills within Scotland.
Absolutely.
There was some good news this week, though, against capitalist developers in in Loch Lomond. One of our colleagues had a bit of a win.
Ross Greer has been really leading the charge against a development called Flamingo Land. It has no flamingos in it. It's named after a theme park that the same company runs down south. It's proposal for a huge development on the shores of Loch Lomond at Balloch, and it's generated, 55,000 objections or more. It's one of the most objected to ever in Scottish planning. And, you know, this, I think, shows me again that people genuinely do care about their community. And it's not about being NIMBYs. It's not about saying we don't want anything. It's about saying, look after our community in the way that we want it looked after. So as of now, we've seen not only the council, but also the National Park, which is the planning authority, coming out with reports recommending the rejection of this development. And the developer has now withdrawn the application.
Yay.
It's good news, but it's not the end of the story. Sometimes, actually very often, the planning system allows a developer to do that, withdraw and then resubmit the application in a way that negates and sort of cancels out all of those previous tens of thousands of objections. We don't want to let them get away with that. We want to make sure that we keep up the pressure against this development. And at the moment, Scottish Enterprise has a kind of exclusivity agreement with this developer. That's just not on. The local community should be able to come up with its proposals for how that site could develop. For how the local community could be in charge of that, in the driving seat, how they could take back control from these kind of corporate developers. Yeah. So we want to put pressure on Scottish Enterprise as well as make sure that we're keeping building the momentum at local level, as Ross has worked so hard to do to show that people really care about protecting their fantastic natural asset on the shores of Loch Lomond.
Well, it's something we see over and over again, that when communities are given the right to have a say about what happens, they make more sustainable choices, they make fairer choices, they make better choices. Big capitalist developers almost never make the right choices for the community. They are only interested in the money in their own pockets.
Sure, absolutely. And obviously the most notorious example we've seen in Scotland of this was the Donald.
Mr. Trump.
And all of those spurious promises about vast amounts of investment and huge numbers of jobs, you know, as though we think the best kind of job future for young people in Scotland is to be the bag carriers to the super rich on a golf course. No, it's not. We can do a lot better
than
that.
We can do better.
But even those promises came to very little in the end. And the many estate, the dynamic dune system has now lost SSI status, this protected status, because it has been trashed. It's lost the qualities that were, in theory, being protected. So if we're going to protect what we love about Scotland, those kind of legal protections, they need to be more than just on paper, and we can't afford to just tear them up when big money talks.
Right, so we'll wrap up there with the just what's upcoming in the party. So for Scottish Green Party members, the next big thing that's happening within the party is party conference.
Absolutely.
That'll be a month from now, October 12th and 13th in Inverness. So please get your tickets. At conference, we'll be announcing our Holyrood candidates.
We'll be announcing our top Holyrood candidates. We'll be looking forward to that Holyrood election campaign, and our branches up and down the country will be sharing their ideas and skills. You know, party conference is not just about voting through motions and, you know, amendments from the floor and you know, passing standing orders and stuff. All of that technical stuff matters, and we want to run our party in a democratic way. But it's also just about catching up with colleagues that you don't get to spend time with, sharing a bit of crack, you know, the lessons learned, you know, some of the stories that people have got from, you know, going out on the doorsteps and campaigning. And so that social purpose of what conference is like is at least as important, I think, as what policy motions you pass.
And there will be some good chat about the Scottish Green New Deal. We have experts within the party on all sorts of topics that will be coming together on that. And finally, this week is the climate strike, global climate strike on Friday. People around the world will be striking to protest government inaction on the climate emergency. So everybody get out with your placards and we'll see you on Friday.
Absolutely. Lots of work to do, but the energy that's being created by that climate strike movement is really inspiring. And the climate strikers are now saying that the point of this week's climate strike is not to say it's enough for the young people to strike. They want everybody striking with them. They want to show that the whole world is impatient for that transformational change and is not willing to sit back and watch climate change happen. And turn into the kind of crisis that could be brewing. We need all of our governments to act. We need to accelerate those targets, but we also need to get real about the transformation that's necessary and how it can work for people.
Brilliant. Well, that sounds good. Well, it was lovely to catch up with you, Patrick.
And we'll be back again before you know it to have another chat and talk about what's going on in all the world of green.
Absolutely. And you can join the conversation. We both have Twitter accounts. I'm at Lorna Greens.
And I'm Patrick Harvey. That's Harvey with an IE. I always have to remind people I'm not an EY, I'm an IE. But you can find us on the Scottish Greens social media channels as well.
Brilliant. Have a great month. We'll see you soon.